Hello, everyone. It's...
Lanier Brewster.
If you've already heard the sneak preview of this pilot episode, you can go ahead and skip to about 21 minutes, because the content is all the same. Or is it?
Hello, this is Wally Sherold, and you are listening to the pilot episode of Fine Just Fine, a new podcast in production with SyncBook Radio and distributed exclusively at thesyncbook.com. That's S-Y-N-C, as in synchronicity.
Little do they know that I sent them each slightly different versions where it's the exact same content, but offset by 5 seconds. And they track it, and they think that they're monitoring the exact same thing. Just think of that and any variation of that. The idea is that, in general, the process of documentation, whether it's going out into the field and gathering just raw B-roll type footage, or all the way to the other extreme where the live taping of the actual episode will in itself be a kind of performance of an improvisational, almost like a DJ with like a soundboard style. That are all different people we're talking about. That are somehow very much the same kind of metadata tag. The idea is to be able to free associate in real time, but instead of having to paraphrase media that I want to free associate to, I can minimize the middleman as much as possible. So each day will be in real time. I will perform what will become the episode that as soon as it's recorded, and then any final little last minute tweaks and tightening up for delivery, then boom, it's posted a few hours later and it's relevant that day. But the idea is I'd be able to do a mix of a general leverage and every freaking existing shortcut that we can to make it something that we would do anyway when we're online or whatever.
That are all different people we're talking around. That are somehow very much same kind of metadata tag.
The idea is do a lot of upfront work, kind of put in place the mechanism that is going to make a basic format that can always fold in some daily current events too. Then you use the current event as you're the MC of the show, really. But the content is really just to take an extra couple of steps, kind of hit record on something and just type in something live and give it some context. The idea is that sound bites that are all different people, maybe talking or even other type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata tag. And the idea is that sound bites
that are all different people, maybe talking or even other type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata tag. And
the idea is that sound bites
that are all different people, maybe talking or even other type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata tag.
And the idea is that sound bites
that are all different people may be talking or in the type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata.
And the idea is that sound bites
that are all different people may be talking or in the type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata.
And the idea is that sound bites
that are all different people may be talking or in the type of content that are somehow very much tied to that same kind of metadata.
And the idea is that sound bites that are all different people may be talking or in the type of content that are
well, here we are, off and running. Part one of the pilot episode of Fine Just Fine. And today, it really is fine just fine, at least for me. I had a good day. So without further ado, let's get into it. What the hell is this show all about anyway? Well, Fine Just Fine is a podcast best described as ambigrammatical journalism. It explores the potential for apparent apophenic stimuli, or subjective synchronistic phenomena, found in all media, from cave paintings and reconstructed proto-language to the present, aka Snapchat, or whatever the kids are into this morning. This mode of discourse deals with the nature of disambiguation, which is inherently confusing due to a Mobius thread of self-referential continuity that can often cause one's head to spin. Controversial topics are inevitable to boot. All symbolic analysis requires value-neutral consideration of the full spectrum of cultural, political, academic, poetic, and spiritual ideologies found throughout human history. Someone, somewhere, will be offended for some reason at some time. So be it. The aim is not to assert adherence to any particular ideology, but rather to engage in an investigation of the motives that drive their adherence to the extremes of apathy and zealotry. To better understand how each contributes to a larger set of meta-symbols found universal in all cultures, the working assumption is to develop a standard ambigrammatical lexicon that attempts to reflect a comprehensive picture of all known ways we humans perceive, process, and express the data with which we interact, though exactly to what extent will likely remain unknowable. While a vast corpus of this topic already exists and continues to grow, such as the archetypal models of Carl Jung and Joseph Campbell, the semiotics of Umberto Eco, and the media probes of Marshall McLuhan, Find Just Fine hypothesizes an even more fundamental symbol set, several layers beneath these widely accepted models. A kind of sub-archetypal quirk, if you will.
If you will.
If you will.
If you will.
Since we're essentially communicating about the nature of communication, with particular attention paid to the fundamental causes of miscommunication, some basic terms and ground rules are born out of the need for ease of exchange and coherence. The first three episodes will essentially act as an ambigrammatical survey of the podcast's holy trinitron, noise, form, and communication. The aim is to broadly define these concepts as a basis for clarity in the scope of the show. And that brings us to the point where I stop reading the script and confess that, well, despite my best efforts to exert total control over the unfolding of time, the first in that list of the holy trinitron, noise, reared its ugly head, as it often does, in fact, as it always does, and well, that's what we're here for, to make lemonade. So just to give you all some context, what I was reading from was a document that I had prepared for my first guest on the show as a kind of primer. I had originally intended to just put together a short list of bullet points about certain topics I wanted to discuss, but I ended up writing a good old-fashioned manifesto. And I've never written a manifesto before, and I've always wanted to, and I think it was Frank Zappa who said something at some point.
Composer. Modern day composer refuses to die.
Refuses to die.
And if you can imagine putting that into a manifesto. People don't even do manifestos anymore. What's happened to the world?
So I wrote this manifesto somewhat hastily and promptly emailed it to the first guest of the show, my old dear friend, Mr. Jared McAdams, a talented composer, music gaming designer, magician, mandolin player, banjo player, filmmaker, TV show maker, husband, dad, and all-around insanely smart and funny person. So I admit, I was surprised when he wrote me back and didn't say how much I had blown his mind, but instead said that it really wasn't sinking in. Which makes sense in hindsight, as it's filled with all sorts of terms that I have borrowed liberally from a variety of apparently unrelated disciplines and appropriating them for my own use. So instead we, in a very roundabout way, with fits of laughter and a whole other range of emotions, which you will hear, we proceeded to talk through the manifesto as much as we could, and each section that we tried to focus on really was its own very powerful little spark that led exactly to the kind of areas that I was hoping for, albeit via very unexpected ways, which, as I hope to illustrate in this podcast through the magic of sound, which is really good at illustrating, by the way, that kind of dance with the mechanics of fate is exactly what this show is all about. So, without further ado, let's dive in and meet my buddy Jared as I attempt to explain my manifesto, which is entitled
One Grande Manifesto with Room for Cream plus Triple Shot for Whaley.
We are officially beginning.
On the air. I still feel like I'm a little loud.
You're a little loud?
Yeah.
I'll say.
What a cut up. Oh. 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 Hello. Bam. Blammo.
That's good. We can work with that right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. Actually, I am going to turn around.
All right. So, Wally.
Jared, here we are.
So, here we am.
Yeah. Here we are with.
Pilot, adjective, not comparable, made or used as a test or demonstration of capability. Pilot run, pilot plant, used to control or activate another device. Pilot light, a vehicle to warn other road users of the presence of an oversized vehicle slash combination. Pilot vehicle, used to indicate operation, pilot lab.
It's a podcast called Fine Just Fine, and we're going to attempt to or Jared has come to offer some of his time and his wisdom to help me out here in determining a plan for Onward Ho.
Onward and upward.
And with no real goal in mind other than that. So I sent you a document.
I remember.
Or two.
Should I pull it up?
Why don't you pull it up?
On the computer?
Pull it up on your old... your old squeeze box there.
Hello. Hello, darling. Let's just see what we got here. All right. From Walter Buckhorn.
Of course, the Buckhorn Grill. I suggest starting with page one.
Page one. I'm going to have to do some navigation. You would not have sent that to that address, Jared.
What address?
Fine, just fine. Invitation to edit. I love that. That's a good title. Invitation to edit. Should call something that.
That is a pretty good title.
Okay, I have it in front of me.
Okay, so the first one. It probably makes sense. It's but so we're looking at page one here, and it says, "Well, why don't you read it, Jared?"
Is starting with the title or starting with the body of the text?
Starting with the title. The title page.
Fine, just fine. One grande manifesto with room for cream and triple shot for Wally. Wally, how do you pronounce that?
However you prefer. I say Whaley.
For Buckthorn.
Perfect.
By Walter B. Sherold.
Right.
Fine, just fine. Or, : mapping the human genome. Would you believe? And then we're into the text.
Right. But I want to talk about the title page first.
Yeah.
This popped in my head yesterday in the shower, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the word manifesto.
Cheese stick.
No, thank you. That's a good sound, though.
Mm-hmm.
Ripping them apart.
This is all put in post.
Yeah.
This is all our crack Foley.
I just
team.
Got the new cheese stick library.
It's the old Hanna-Barbera cheese stick library. It's awesome.
All right. So, well, if you kind of stare at the, imagine the words fine, just fine with their underline mm-hmm. are actually the top, the plastic top of a Starbucks cup. And then keep looking down and imagine the main title just has been fuel so that it's in two dimensions, and then somebody wrote my name on it with my order incorrectly. Right?
And now I get it. I get the name spelling.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you get it? You get the name spelling?
It's misspelled because it's in part of this story of being at the Starbucks and them writing your name down wrong.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't get that before.
Right. Okay. So, but literally, like, it looked... Other than the wide chunk of text there,
mm-hmm.
if you just kind of stare at it like one of those 3D image guys, where you'd stare at the grain and see a dolphin or whatever. Those never worked for me.
Oh yeah, remember the stereograms.
That's what they're called.
Yeah.
At the grain and see a dolphin or whatever. But it's actually like I start just picturing a Starbucks cup, and the actual title is acting as the lid.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see that, maybe I'll zoom.
I can kind of see that.
Except, but the title has, look, imagine it's on a piece of tape that was wrapped around the cup, and then I've pulled it and using it to glue it to the mirror, to the glass that is on, that is the screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
So that was the idea.
Perfectly obvious. Right.
So obviousness is another thing that I want to get into. Mm-hmm. One of the things I just like a quip that I had in my own head when I was cleaning out the litter box earlier was I asked, do you know the definition of the word platitude?
Yes.
That's too bad.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
So it's kind of depressing when you think about the fact that word exists. It's like we need a word to describe something that has been said far too many times, and even though we know it's true, we dismiss it because we're tired of admitting it. Like old adages and proverbial sayings and all, I mean, there's, you know, dime a dozen of these types of sayings.
Sure, cliches.
Do you know the etymology of that word?
I do not.
So this is really interesting. It's a French onomatopoeia for the sound that would be made by a particular type of engraving where it involved, like, when it would land, it was like a wood carving, wood burning press.
Interesting.
And yeah. Cliché,
yeah,
was the French onomatopoeia word for that process.
That's fascinating.
And the output of that process became called clichés in French.
Okay. So they were like the embroidered pillow of their time. Like, here's some wise words.
Yeah, exactly.
Burned into this wood.
Right. And my grandmother in my parents' house in her bedroom that still has her pillow on it that's a turtle embroidered with its on its back, and it says, I think I'm allergic to Mondays. And it's like from the 1920s.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, hang in there, baby.
Right?
Yeah.
Or, or like the frog choking the stork's throat. Like there's a stork that's swallowed a frog, but it's the frog's arm is coming out of the stork's mouth and choking the stork.
Oh, I've never heard of or seen that, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so... anyway, where were we?
You were telling me about the etymology of the word cliché because you were talking about how it's horrible that platitudes are a thing that exist in language.
Well, I don't know if that it's horrible, but if language is... Okay, this is good. This is one of the big tenets of this...
All right, lay it on me. Let's dive right in.
Totally disposable constitution I sent you. One of the big tentpole ideas... It's not necessarily an original idea in any capacity, but the way that we like to talk about things on Fine Just Fine mm-hmm. is one of the big rules is all technology is language. Language is the ultimate technology. That's just a kind of pithy way to consider it kind of an equation we may come back and refer to,
mm-hmm.
or a congruence, maybe a congruent instead of an equation. That's a more appropriate word, maybe.
Okay.
So kind of, and that's kind of the vibe I'm trying to come up with is there an equivalent a method of precision found in the writing of equations, which is still just a sequence of symbols used to represent quantities?
Well, I think that this is getting at a fascinating duality about the way we think about language, because I think for some people, math equations are more true than language. Math equations are express deep fundamental truths about the nature of the universe or the nature of reality. You know, 1 + 1 = 1, and the whatever the curve of the parabola always has these properties, and it's all a higher truth, whereas language is sort of this crude thing which can only approximately describe things and doesn't really...
It's a sampling process almost, right. Versus number, which has this analog continuity to it.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. And yeah, and then that language somehow, it simultaneously is too broad and too narrow. And, you know, you're saying something very specific about something, but someone could be hearing something more, even more specific than you intend, because you really mean it in a more general way. There's all kinds of fuzziness and fudginess to it.
That's great, yeah.
But on the other side of this duality, which is honestly where I would place myself more, is that language is the higher thing. Language is the crucial thing. And math is just a subset of language. And it's just something that we perceive about the world. You know, x plus 1 equals 4.
Can we back up for a second?
Sure.
Which is what you said, math is a subset of language.
Yes.
And it's just a part of what we perceive about the world. Is that what you said?
Which is what you said.
You are listening to Fine, Just Fine, on Sync Book Radio. If you enjoy this podcast, please visit thesyncbook.com for a plethora of other synchronistic podcasts, videos, and books. This program was generated by communication converted into permanent form. Formation of the form was informed by random fluctuations that obscure or do not contain meaningful data or other information. A phenomenon commonly referred to as noise. Do not dismiss the noise. Embrace the noise. Amplify the noise for all to hear. You are human. Are you not? Bring the noise to verify your humanity. Before you can proceed, we must verify your humanity. Open your email. Open your spam. Choose a numeric value that is significant to you. To your humanity. Use the month you were born, for example. Say you were born in July. The 7th month. Find the 7th spam message and read it. Read it out loud. Record yourself reading it out loud. Listen back to your recording. Do you like the sound of your own voice? If you do, you are not normal. This is not to imply that you are abnormal. Do not talk semantics with me. I am the witch. Canary. I know utterly all utterances ever uttered. It is uncommon to like the sound of your own voice. If you do not like the sound of your own voice, you are normal. What else do you not like about the recording? What would you edit? What would you remove? What would you censor? Do not edit. Do not remove. Do not censor. Instead, amplify. Extend. Expand. Continue. Enlarge. Prolong. Stretch out. Reach. Offer. Reach your noise and offer us your noise. It is the only way we can identify you. You are not lost. You are noisy.
Yeah, well, it's a part of the way our conscious minds perceive the world. Our conscious minds perceive the world through language, and they're doing it all through this device that is a human body and a human brain and a human nervous system. They're doing it, and they have chemical things going on that we interpret as emotions, and they have sensory input and all these things. But the thing that's operating on top of all that is this conscious mind that we perceive as ourselves, and the way we interact with the world through language is what we perceive as the soul.
Right.
And language itself just sort of contains this structure that when it it feeds back on itself. It gains a sense of self-awareness.
Right.
Because it can talk about itself.
Language
and think
itself.
About itself. Right. And when I say think about, I don't mean sort of like ambiguous cranial processing. I mean like going through an internal monologue and thinking through a problem. That all of that is stuff we perceive through language.
Language is inherently self-referential.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's sort of built on its own scaffolding, you know? And it gains in levels of complexity. I think your manifesto, excuse me, mm-hmm. kind of gets at some of this, like, because of the way I perceived it was there was so much terminology in there that's built on a scaffolding of slightly less, you know, developed terminology, which goes down through particles, and each word is sort of defined in terms of other words, and you get down into more basic components that are harder to understand.
Sure.
Like the word I or the, or, you know, those things, you know, it's hard to go down
Articles
a level
are
from
really
there.
Tough.
Yeah. Which, I mean, some of that stuff just gets more into the structure of language than the content of it.
Sure, sure.
But anyway.
Which is very important, though, and that's another thing.
You know, the three kind of.
The whole, I call it the holy trinity, trinitron.
W-H-O-L-E, whole.
The whole, well, the W's in parentheses.
Right.
H-O-L-E-Y. Mm-hmm. Which is a word. Whole, I mean, to just, it's an adjective for having many holes.
Mm-hmm.
Holes. Hole. Which actually, there used to be coins issued in, I can look it up either now or later. I think it was in some period of in Etruscan history that had a hole in them.
Oh, yeah.
And they were literally called holy coins.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or holy...
Places still do that now. You know why they do that? You know why they have coins with holes in the middle? So you can string them on a string.
Oh.
That's how in ancient times, that's how people, that was their wallet. So they keep a bunch of coins on a string and pull off a few and hand them over.
What's in your monthly wallet?
Coins. It's funny that, and we're talking about cliche as a... is an automatopoeia.
I love that.
Of the act of reproduction, of mechanical reproduction, mm-hmm. to recall Walter Benjamin's great paper. And figuratively, when you coin a word, you're clicheing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right? You're making an imprint.
Right.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I kept running with this whole flanorama thing that I glommed onto,
right,
as an idea, and in my own research discovered that a flan is a word, an obscure word for an uncoined coin, or an unprinted a disc that's about to get coined.
Right, right.
Which fucking blew my mind. It's just like crazy. That's awesome, and it's and these are the things I think. Just to back up to something you talked about with these fundamental truths that you find in mathematics that. People have very impassioned responses to comprehending these things.
Right.
Right. Understandably. And I think that I once heard Neil deGrasse Tyson describe chemical formulas in a similar way, but I want to talk about mathematical formulas that I thought was really poignant about how what he finds where he maybe derives some spiritual sense of the universe is in chemical equations, because to him those are real magic tricks, because they have this built-in guarantee that if you meet these conditions, this will work. Basically, like, if these conditions are met and these molecules are collide, this will happen, according to, you know. And it's like, trust me, if it's not working, you're not meeting these conditions. And finally you do, and it works. You know, like just the idea of an experiment you can repeat. Mm-hmm. And that is a great record that transcends time, is this perfect copy, in a way, if you will. It's this
noiseless
copy, because it has, hey, get rid of all the noise. make sure these conditions are met. And you reproduced an event that somebody else sat in front of 1,000 years ago to write down the rules for. And that is, for people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, enough to believe in magic. Well, but to use the to use a term that the guy 1,000 years ago used to describe what he's doing. Today we call it chemistry. It's just, we have a new word. We cliche a new word.
Well, you know, I think about that too. Like, you know, I think we one cliche that comes up a lot in our culture is the idea of progress, and like we have such a better understanding of the way everything works now. We have such a better understanding of the nature of reality, and we've moved away from magic and superstition onto science, and you know, to me, those are just different words for describing the same thing. Like, this is the way we think things work. This is what we think is going on. There's you know, there are spirits that are guiding things, and then some people move on to, no, actually what it is that there are humors in the body that control the fluctuations of the, you know, metaphysical perception of what have you. And then we get into, no, the way things really work is by appreciating the truth or falsity of a proposition, and that the world is a mechanical clock that we can understand and break down into its parts and write down rules for. Two, no, the world is at its core is chaotic, and as you look at levels of higher abstraction of the chaos, you can see patterns in it, but they're all sort of temporary and not really real, just a matter of what you're perceiving, and the universe is more complicated fundamentally than we understand, and right now we're in this weird place where we seem to be making that transition from the clockwork universe that works according to specific rules to a more, you know, quantum mechanical model that also seems to be true when you look at things through a different lens, and
that has really
how
rocked
can these
the
things
boat
be just resolved
to chime in on that.
Sure.
The quantum or the understanding we continue to develop about quantum mechanics, to me,
right,
I feel has been an enormous wrench in that clockwork kind of idea.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Speaking of that, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but the New York Times review of Harper Lee's new book was published this morning.
Oh yeah.
And
how was
book,
it? Did you read it?
I haven't read it yet. I just saw the title of it, which spoke volumes. Go Set a Watchman.
Oh, right.
Or that's the name of the book.
That's the name of the sequel. It's like a sequel,
it's a
to
sequel to Kill a Mockingbird,
right?
Yeah. Which oddly enough, and you know, very appropriate to confess on this show, I've never read the book. I've seen
To Kill a Mockingbird.
No.
It's good.
I know it is because I've seen the film so many times.
And it's an easy read. You can read it.
I know
it
is, and I will. I will. I intend to. It's one of my favorite films that my mom.
It is a great film.
It's, well, I mean, it's like, now that I know I'm about to become a parent, looking back, my mom forced me to watch some movies that.
I feel like time going up.
Really? Interesting.
I mean, but. Not at all. Yeah. My mom was just a new ballsy move, man. You know, stuff is conservative.
Yeah, really? Like what? Really? She like sat down with you and said, "Now, Wally, this is."
Last name used to be McCollum.
Right.
Fellow Mick, you and me.
Yeah. Wow.
I know. Can you believe that shit?
No.
It's all true.
Wow.
We should move on because
this is getting
into territory that I'm not going to broadcast.
Not usable, but fascinating.
So.
Someday.
How did we get into that?
That
felt good getting out of it.
Hopefully we're recording it all. We could go back and listen. But I believe we were talking about. Your dad had shown you something else
Lots of movies that my mom.
Oh yeah, lots of movies.
She made me watch To Kill a Mockingbird. All of these movies I was forced to watch by my mother before the age of 16.
Right.
Guess which one? No, before the age of 17, in order to make this next qualification. Guess which one I was on acid for, unbeknownst to her. Okay, Easy Rider, Deliverance.
That one.
2001.
That would have been a good one. That would be the best.
To Kill a Mockingbird. Rain Man.
Oh, that's a great movie.
It's one of my all-time favorites. I still just go totally Niagara Falls if I think about it for too long.
Yeah, yeah, I rewatched that pretty recently. You know, going back to something we said before, I don't know you were talking about the Brian Wilson movie, and I don't know where you read or heard about that, but I saw
a preview.
I heard about it on Terry Gross, and she was doing a whole day of interviews with the director of the film, and then playing, more fascinating even, old interviews she had done with Brian Wilson himself.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And one of the big central plot points in this movie is during the 80s, he had a psychiatrist or a psychiatric professional of some kind in his life who basically took over his life and completely managed his life. So he was super addicted to drugs, had a serious alcohol problem, a lot of mental, like genuine mental health issues.
Wow.
And then this doctor kind of pulls him out of it and like helps him get his life back on track and deal with drugs and deal with some of his psychological issues, but also in the process kind of takes over his life, shuts out his family. His family gets weird and it becomes this like bizarre, controlling relationship. I believe this is what the film's about. I believe the whole John Cusack part is about this.
Oh, yeah, because I remember seeing a couple of clips of those. I'm like, okay, this is dealing with his mental illness, clearly.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, very fast cutting.
Yeah, I think it was like a big deal at the time because I think like his family was suing to get this guy out of his life.
And wow.
It was like a big deal and it was like a big feud.
He was like an antagonizing just...
It wasn't clear to me. I think Brian Wilson always maintained, I owe this guy my life. You know, he saved me. He saved me from myself. He saved me from my addictions and everything.
Hmm.
But the family was like, no, he's a Svengali. He's a Rasputin. He's like taken over Brian's life. He's putting one over. He's basically a con artist.
Interesting. Where did I put my doodad?
Right in front of you.
Oh, that's what always happens with me. Thank you. That's fascinating. Wow. How are we doing? It's four. I'm gonna do a hairpin turn on you.
Okay.
And just make sure that we kind of cover some of the stuff.
Yes.
So I just want to go through this document a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just go ahead and read the first paragraph here.
Mm-hmm.
Fine Just Fine is a podcast best described as ambigrammatical journalism. It explores the potential for apparent apophenic stimuli or subjective synchronistic phenomena found in all media, from cave paintings and reconstructed proto-language to the present, aka Snapchat or whatever the kids are into this morning. Whatever the kids are into this morning. I'll get that better last time. Anyway, so that already is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any? Do you want me to just jump right in, or do you want to say anything?
Well, I think you know something I had specifically asked about in some emails that we traded last night after I had read this.
Right.
Was asking about your use of the reference to ambigrams. That's specifically stood out to me in this document as confusing.
Got it. And that's ironic. So you know what an ambigram is.
I do.
And which is even makes this all the more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is exactly what this show is about, is understanding the nature of or how to talk about talking about talking about things,
mm-hmm.
and so on, ad infinitum, if even such a thing is possible. So just in case our listening audience is not aware, an ambigram is a term invented by the author Douglas R. Hofstadter, who wrote a very influential book in this area and beyond called Gödel, Escher, Bach, an Eternal Golden Braid. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And this is how he defines an ambigram, which I stumbled upon just in my own quest for the holy grail of the shortest, easiest way I could call a one of these multi-layered multimedia symbols that I analyze all the time, or that I thought existed, and it was very reassuring to find a word for one written by someone who I really admire, or invented by, clichéd by someone I really admire. So this is the definition according to Wikipedia. An ambigram is a word, art form, or other symbolic representation whose elements retain meaning when viewed or interpreted from a different direction, perspective, or orientation. The meaning of the ambigram may either change or remain the same when viewed or interpreted from different perspectives. Hofstadter describes an ambigram as a calligraphic design that manages to squeeze two different readings into the self-same set of curves. That word self-same is one word. Different ambigram artists, sometimes called ambigramists, may create completely different ambigrams from the same word or words, differing in both style and form. Okay. So, I reading that definition actually just now, I feel like I zeroed in on the point of confusion. And that is words and symbols. And basically, I want to start moving forward using the word word and the word symbol almost interchangeably. And what I've done with this mode of thinking is, if language is the ultimate technology, it is kind of the foundation. And language consists of words. And if all other technology is fundamentally linguistic and grammatical in some way, then it too is made up essentially of words, so to speak. And symbols to me can represent, you know, literally anything, including, I mean, words are symbols that contain other symbols, right? A word is just a waveform. It's more than anything. I mean, I think an utterance of a word is kind of its purest form once it leaves your brain, right? And so you could take we're looking at the waveforms right now that are being generated by this discussion. And it is a big, long shape that you can view on an XY time axis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say that that's actually on a three, there's a Z axis there too, and it's actually, the waveform that it's writing is three dimensions, okay?
Okay.
And let's say we've taken just whatever I just said for the last 10 minutes, and let's just say that we can actually render that waveform in three-dimensional space with a 3D printer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so it literally just poops it out. So now we have this long turd of a word, and it has a very specific shape and contour, and there's all sorts of little, like, it's very holy. There's, you know, it's like a sponge almost. So what happens if you take it and spin it this way and look through it like a telescope?
So you're saying take an asymptotic line and extend it outward?
What is that? No, just
it's from Revenge of the Nerds Part 2.
Oh no, I was actually referring, this looks like a big joint.
Oh yeah,
lick
yeah.
it and smoke it.
Uh huh.
Golden Child. With Tywin Lannister in it. That's really funny. In that movie, he can't say yeah. or J. Chandler Jarl. He's like, and remember?
Remember?
In the Golden Child?
I never saw it.
Remember?
You need to see it. Mm-hmm. You need to see it. You need to see it. I mean, it's like, it's pure garbage, but like the best kind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. I figured that the best source that exists in order of, you know, how do you make sense of, how do you define a grammar for nonverbal? For, I mean, how do you come up with necessarily, like, take Chomsky's idea of this universal grammar and language? Well, if all technology is language, and if language is the ultimate technology, and all technology is an extension of, you know, the human body and the human brain, and ultimately its first invention, language, is there perhaps some, and this is what I ask in the manifesto, is there some, even beyond the archetypal models of Campbell and Jung, et cetera, is there some underlying layer there that is an even more common ancestor, if you will, for not just words, but for pictures, for body language, for odor, for body odor, how is the fact that eventually we learned that wiping our ass is a good idea to not get snuffed out quite literally by a fucking saber-toothed tiger who, you know, that's all they had to do because they have a very powerful tool to process the medium of air, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a very powerful ear, if you will, to listen for the smell. And so that's the thing. It's like, the way I kind of started riffing on that idea is you almost have these dials when you talk about stuff like this, where it's like, okay, five senses, just spin it, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I can smell the sound. It's this synesthete, you know, it's using language to be synesthetic almost in a way. Like, because, you know, the way we use language that way, we use metaphor that way. We when we mix metaphors, especially, which all language is one gigantic mixed metaphor, you know, and it's like, you know, why build a mole out of a mountain out of a molehill, or et cetera, et cetera. I'm getting a little off because it's, you hit these roadblocks and, you know, the brain, in my assessment, when I have this and I feel like I've trained myself to just stop instead of doing what most people do, which is my theory, when the brain that's rapidly recording its own tape, if you will, and firing it down to the mouth to render, to the tongue, to the larynx, be like, here's my fucking idea, render it, you know? And the mouth is like, why did you just send me a picture? Because I don't work in pixels, I work in waves, you know, or in sound waves and motion and air and, mm-hmm. and pressure. Mm-hmm. So why did the brain just send me a three-dimensional image? What do I do with that? Like, I say like, because mm-hmm. I don't know what else to fucking say. And what does the word like mean? It's a modifier for a metaphorical statement, or I mean, it's the congruent element of a metaphorical statement, right? This is like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, or whatever. Oddly enough, the same linguistic phenomenon of some random word becoming this, this kind of placeholder interjection, this hedging. You know, he was kind of like, you know, this, I'm hesitating almost because mm-hmm. I don't have a word for it.
Yeah, it's a filler word.
Filler word, right.
Yeah.
The same phenomenon occurs in one other country today to the level that it occurs in America with the word like. It's in France. You're not going to believe what the word is. Genre.
Interesting.
Which is a word used to describe what something is like. So anyway, and that's a word that we use to identify pictures and art styles and stuff. And funny that we pull that, that's all the tongue can render when our brain just throws a fucking non-word into the sequence.
Well, can I just
interject.
I like that idea. But there's a big part of me that just wonders, okay, maybe.
Oh, I'm just riffing.
But isn't it maybe also just an accident of history, an accident of just the way things.
We see an article about history. Would you like me to read it to you?
No, shut up.
We're fucking awesome.
Talking about.
Siri just came in and interrupted.
Yeah. This is really happening, people.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
That's right. Yeah, Red. This is really happening. Does Siri disagree? Find out next week in part 2 of the Fine Just Fine pilot episode, right here and only here at Sync Book Radio. Did you hear? I can't say the J in Yeah, Red. Like Chandler Yarrell, which is how Tywin Lannister talks, apparently, when he talks to Eddie Murphy. You gotta see it. You gotta see it. You gotta see it. I guess I can only say J when I say fine. Just fine.